Michael Myers is back. Well, not really. He didn't actually go anywhere. So Michael Myers is still here in the one horror sequel that dares to begin so close to the end of its predecessor that they actually overlap a little. It's Halloween 2, and it was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
My name's Sean Collier. This is the number one movie in America. I'm here with two people who just need to strut.
Yeah.
It's Camila Adams.
Yes, get your strut on.
And Robin Hitchcock.
Stay ing alive.
Ing. We're not alone. As we talked about last week, I'd like to introduce John Greenlee to the podcast. Hi, John.
Hi, how's everyone doing? Happy October.
Yay!
That's right. It's spooky season officially. John, as we mentioned last week, was kind enough to bid on our auction with Arcade Comedy Theater to be a guest on the podcast to support Arcade. We really appreciate your donation and your interest. Tell us, of all of the things that you could have bid on at the Arcade Comedy Theater auction, what brings you to us, John?
Well, I'm a big fan of the podcast, a regular listener, and I really enjoy all your insights on movies. And I heard you mention that it was one of the auctions available. So, you know, started bidding, and there may or may not have been a few glasses of wine involved when I kept increasing my bid, and just thought this would be a lot of fun. And so that was why I went ahead and bid on that item.
Thank you so much. I work at the Arcade Comedy Theater, and obviously we're struggling. We've been mostly closed since March. And this is when I tell all of our listeners that if you want to support Arcade 2, you can go to our Arcade at Home fundraiser page, and you can make a small donation. Even like $5 makes a huge difference to us.
Yeah, also, I do like supporting the arts. I do miss live theater so much. Have a cousin who works on Broadway, and he was on the My Fair Lady tour when everything got shut down. Have a subscription to the Broadway series. Of course, was looking forward to the Hamilton return, which I guess now we'll have to wait another year for. But hopefully things will get back to normal soon and we'll all be back enjoying the things that we do, theater.
I am curious to know how you found the podcast, like, because as we mentioned before, you're like the first person, the first special guest we've had that none of us knows personally. And the fact that you said that you're a big fan. Well,
I started listening to You Can't Handle the Truth. I may have heard you mention it, Sean, on DVE one morning and just started listening to you and Aaron. So I've just always been a huge movie fan. I mean, back in the day, watched Siskel and Ebert all the time. And just been one of those things that I really, you know, really enjoy your insights, you know, about movies and stuff like that. So just hung it with it when you guys changed the format. And, you know, it's nice to go back and relive some of those 80s memories, stuff like Breaking and Staying Alive and all that stuff. So
nice.
We got to get localized two people arguing about movie TV shows back on the air. You'd think with all of the hours there are to fill, why can't we sit in, you know, the Waterworks Mall Cinema and argue about Tenet for 25 minutes? Someone's got to be interested in that, right?
Yep, absolutely. And it was nice back in the day hearing about movies that, you know, didn't play in Pittsburgh and kind of opened my, you know, movie going experience up to, you know, foreign and independent movies and stuff like that. So
I had the exact same experience with Siskel and Ebert. And last night I rewatched Eve's Bayou, which is one of my favorite movies of all time, which Roger Ebert went like hard for that movie. He was like always talking about it. He picked it as his best movie of 1997, which was a great year of movies. So rest in peace to the both of them.
Yeah.
Well, referring to things like Eve's Bayou and My Fair Lady has no transition at all to your selection. John, why was it Halloween 2 that you decided we should be talking about this week?
Well, I figured since we were getting into the Halloween season, I wanted to pick something, you know, from the horror genre, since we were, you know, going to be doing this since it would be dropping in October. And the original Halloween is in my top five of movies in general and is probably my favorite horror movie. So I wanted to pick something from the franchise, and just going through, it was either this movie or Halloween 4. And I figured, you know, I would pick the better of the two. I would have loved to have done H2O, but that was not a number one movie. And I know that you had just recently reviewed the most recent sequel, which I thought was amazing, and figured, you know, no sense in doing something you had done recently. And I generally, it's a tradition for me on Halloween night, I will watch Halloween 1 and 2 back to back. So thought it might be fun to pick this as a selection given the time of year.
I really do. I co-sign the whole thematic holiday movie marathon tradition. Like, I'm here for it. Mine is usually just to go through all the Saw movies, but yes, I just,
that's so many movies. That's
all week. That's like the, it's usually actually pretty much, and now it's probably going to be all month with a child, because now I have to wait until she's put away before I can sit and watch the mutilations that happen on a Saw movie.
Right. There are some horror movies you can get away with in front of a baby. Right. You know, like, you could put The Omen on, and really, there's not going to be a lot of comprehension there. But Saw is just screaming and gore. That's not appropriate for any. That's barely appropriate for us.
Yeah.
Right.
Now I really hope that we just draw Halloween 4 next. There are things to recommend Halloween 4.
Yeah.
There are not a lot of them.
Yeah, I actually had a great memory of seeing that for the first time. And that was my first time. I went to college at Fordham University, and so seeing Halloween 4 was my first experience at a rowdy Times Square theater, seeing a horror movie, which was just an absolute blast. I mean, the callbacks to the screen and things like that. So that also is a movie that I thought about going with that, because just the fun that I had seeing it for the first time.
With a little luck, maybe that's coming up. Halloween 4, we'll get on track here any minute now. Halloween 4, I only saw for the first time 2 or 3 years ago, because specifically Horror Nights at Universal was going to have a Halloween 4 attraction. And I was like, well, I need to brush up on this before I enter the world of Halloween 4. And I like it. The haunted attraction was better than the movie. But whatever, like, distance you can have during a haunted house, like, this isn't real, that's a person in the, that goes away when it's Michael Myers. Like, your brain can't, like, when Michael Myers is lunging at you with a knife, your brain does not have the ability to go, this is make-believe. You just cower.
Yeah, I actually made a trip down there that year also for Halloween Horror Nights.
Oh, yeah?
And we're huge haunted house fans. We kept saying, this is the year we're going to go. So I'm glad that we finally made it that year. And the trick-or-treat house was also really good that year.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you guys, Robin, I can't with the horror, haunted houses.
Nope, that's not for me.
I can't do it. Somebody, I would leave there like in cuffs because somebody came at me the wrong way. Local woman stabs actor in haunted house. Like, we thought we frisked her. We didn't know she had a knife in her boot.
I'm gearing up for the new socially distanced scare house this weekend, so I'll report back next week. Robin, I was going to ask, did you double feature Halloween 1 and 2?
I did not. I basically waited too long to start them, and it was going to be too late.
I feel like, I did not watch them back to back either, but I feel like it would be a better experience to watch them back to back.
Oh, I'm definitely going to do that at some point in my life.
The only reason I didn't was because I've seen the original so many times that it felt like overkill. But for those who have not gone to Halloween 2 recently, Robin, who swears to us that this is her most prepared recap in months, is here with a 60-second recap of the first of several movies called Halloween 2. And go.
The end of Halloween is the beginning of Halloween 2. Michael Myers is terrorizing Laurie. Dr. Loomis saves her by shooting Mike off a balcony. But dun dun dun, he just left a dent in the lawn. He disappeared. The credits pumpkins has a skull in it this time. Dr. Loomis tries to help the cops find him. They just kill innocent trick-or-treaters. Laurie's taken to the hospital by horny paramedics. Michael goes around killing people. Michael shows up at the hospital to get Laurie. There are a lot of gruesome deaths, including a lady with spectacular breasts having her face melted off in an overheated hot tub. Laurie has dreams. Loomis has theories. These reveal Michael and Laurie are siblings, and Michael is indestructible because he has some connection to the Celtic festival of Samhain, which is where Halloween comes from. Laurie and Michael face off. Laurie shoots his eyes out. Loomis has to come save Laurie, shoots Michael some more, realizes that didn't work out so well the last time, so he blows Michael and himself up. Laurie watches Michael's face burn. The movie yet.
Well done.
Boom.
That was, did, like, I do it?
Yep. Yes.
Nailed it.
Yeah.
I wanted to honor John's selection.
I love it. I love the look on your face once you finished it. It was almost like you should have been dropping a mic when you like it was like
I did throw my arms in the air, or I sort of started to, and then I was like, I don't know if I actually hit it under 60. How long was it?
Oh, well, it was about 46 seconds.
Vindication!
And for that, like you went ahead and recapped the previously on Halloween that begins this movie. I love that this begins with okay, we know we're starting right away, but we're going to rewind a little bit into a film you've already seen, right. Just so everybody's clear.
I appreciate that.
I think that was the right choice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they didn't go too far back into it. It wasn't like a full on like, oh, this is the whole thing that happened. But yeah, we just needed a pinch, just a little reminder, especially since they pick right up.
There were a few other ideas thrown around. I guess they were going to take it out of Haddonfield and have it in a high rise somewhere. But ultimately, they decided to just literally pick up right after the first one ended, which I think is really effective.
Yeah. In a high rise somewhere.
Yeah, that was one of the things that was kicked around. So
I mean, was it like crossing over with Die Hard? I don't understand like why.
I think it would have been like Laurie Strode moves out of Haddonfield and Michael finds her. So
nope. Yes, save it for H2O or whatever.
Right. Yep.
Robin, you got a kind of the two biggest things that this adds to the series, both of which have kind of, you know, become criticized as hurting the series. One, that they're siblings, and two, that he's magic because of druids. Those were the two things that like have been criticized the most as hurting the momentum of the series. I think, Robin, I think you're the only one that had no exposure beyond the first movie.
I have seen H2O and I don't really remember it. And I also saw the 2018 Halloween. And of course, saw the Rob Zombie Halloween. Well, yes.
The Rob Zombie Halloween. But the whole like Halloween 2-6 arc was unknown to you.
Completely unknown.
What does it do for you that he's magic and Laurie's brother?
Nothing. I agree with the popular consensus. I think the Laurie's brother thing, like that's such a boring, tired trope of, oh, they're all connected by family, like Star Wars. So I don't get much out of that, but it does at least make sense. The only parts of this movie where I was really struggling were some of the Dr. Loomis and the cops parts, because first of all, the cops are idiots.
Oh my God.
Like they're bad at their jobs.
Just like the fact that they kept hollering at him about, you know, why'd you let him out? Keeps it. I did let him out. Like, and there'd be the screaming thing, like, you let him out. And he's like, but I didn't let him out. That wasn't.
Loomis is keeping it in check in the first movie. In this one, he is losing it. By the end of it, if he had made one more, I was right, and here's my thoughts on this speech. It's like, oh, look, we get it. He's evil. You tried. Now he's out. Thanks. Just go shoot him.
I must have missed something. Is it literally said in there that he's magic? Is it the Sam Haim thing? Sam Haim?
So this is where I'm like, John, can you help us out, or Sean? Because like I am confused.
That was kind of the theory in the original movie, that he was just this presence and just, you know, pure evil, as Loomis says. Yeah, right, the shape. That was why he wasn't even given a character name. And Carpenter really did not want to make Halloween 2, but was there was a lawsuit involving his other movie deal with Avco Embassy. So as part of the settlement, he had to write Halloween 2 and kind of crowbarred the story about Laurie being Michael Myers' brother after a night of drinking, because he just couldn't figure out what to do with it. In his mind, the story ended with the original film, but right. You know, some movies arise out of inspiration. Halloween 2 arose out of litigation because he was being sued. And, that was just a, you know, and as Sean said, it kind of took the series down a strange path for the rest of the sequels, where in 4, 5, and 6 he's stalking his niece. And I did like how they took that out of the canon with the most recent sequel and just made it a strict direct sequel to the original film, and kind of brought back the whole, you know, Michael is just pure evil and there's no real reason why he's stalking, you know, the characters in the movie. It's just, I don't know, just evil aura about him.
I think you're all right where it doesn't really matter if he's related to Laurie or not. Like, it could have just been the fact that she was the one who got away, and that's why he right. would be mm-hmm. so fixated on her. But like, as just like, I need to kill my entire bloodline, like there was really no cool backstory for that.
Mm-hmm. And like, well, why does he
yeah Okay, why four?
Because he's purely and simply evil. That's, you know, that's why, while I like a number of them, all but two or three of the 11 Halloween movies get it wrong. Because while it's fine to make it more than the shape, it's more frightening if he doesn't have any particular reason for being evil. He's just a literal bad seed. Something went wrong from the start, right. And so that's it. It's scarier if there's not, oh, this is because druids or family, or like in the Rob Zombie one where it's childhood trauma. That all makes it less scary than, nope, it's an evil guy, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So the druids, because I was losing interest in Dr. Loomis saying, I told you so.
What?
What is the actual theory?
I haven't seen 5 and 6. John, have you seen, can you explain what is revealed that late?
I have. Well, there are two versions of Halloween 6. There's the theatrical cut and the producer's cut, which is a little bit better than the theatrical cut because Donald Pleasance died midway through the movie and they were having a hard time finishing it. But
you know what? For a second, John. I just want to give you props for this deep, deep, deep cuts, man. Like, this is...
I have so much useless knowledge in my head. This is some insight, man.
Like, go off. All right, continue.
Anyway, so they do kind of tie Michael to some druid cult, the Thorn, I think it was called. Very young Paul Rudd is in that movie. He plays Tommy Doyle. If you want to complete the series, it's worth watching, but part 6 is very, very bizarre, and that's where it goes more into the whole druid idea of Michael's origins.
Whoa. I don't know. I think you summed it up for me.
A lot of this is in some of the series timelines and not others. Let's do the factsy segment because this addresses some of this, admittedly, at a more surface level than John has just ready to go. But Halloween 2 was released October 30th, Halloween Eve, 1981, the 24th number one film of that year. One, its opening weekend with $7.4 million. That's all we know about that weekend. This is one of those weekends before 82. It was probably only a one-week number one movie in America because Time Bandits debuted, presumably in first, the following weekend with $6.5 million. It's not likely that Halloween 2 would have held better than that after the holiday weekend. In fact, they probably released it a little too close to the holiday because it dove pretty quickly after Halloween night. It ended up making $25.5 million, 30th top grossing film of the year. That was better than Friday the 13th Part 2, which was out earlier in the year, but not the top grossing horror film of 1981. That would be American Werewolf in London. Unquestionably better movie.
Definitely.
Among the Halloween franchise, how this movie earned more than the next four, more than like that run, but less than all the others. The series totals go, the 2018 film obviously is the most successful, over $159 million, followed by our old friend Rob Zombie at 58.2. H2O is in third, that made about $55 million. The original made about $47 million. The Rob Zombie sequel made $33 million. Halloween Resurrection in 2002 made $30 million. Then we get to this Halloween 2. None of Halloween's 3 through 6 made more than $20 million. As John alluded, this was supposed to be the end of the Michael Myers story. The intention was, he's dead, Loomis is dead, Laurie survived, we're done. They wanted to convert the series to an anthology with new disconnected plots in every subsequent movie.
Didn't they basically do that? Isn't that what this franchise turned into? A bunch of unrelated stuff?
They just developed a willingness to hit that reset button basically every couple of movies. But the first try of this, Halloween 3 Season of the Witch, has nothing to do with Michael Myers. It's a completely unrelated story about witchcraft and a curse. Tom Atkins stars. I haven't watched it. It's supposed to be interesting. John, Halloween 3?
I really did not like it at first, but taking a second look at it, I've kind of grown an appreciation for this movie. I went last year. They had a screening at the Science Center that Tom Atkins introduced. It was a sold-out crowd, and it ended up being a blast. I mean, it has its fans, but again, when the movie was originally released, everybody went to the theater expecting to see Michael Myers, and when he wasn't in it, it was a big disappointment. But it is just a goofy, you know, science fiction horror movie that it can be a lot of fun to watch, and Tom Atkins is solid as he usually is in those type of movies.
Right. Of course.
Who is Tom Atkins?
Tom Atkins is a Pittsburgh-born actor. Locally, he is best known as a theater actor, particularly for playing Art Rooney in The Chief over 10 years at the Public Theater, being the one-man play about the
founder of
the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yes.
That my dad wrote. So there you go.
Yes.
A great play. Really enjoyed it.
Oh, it's very kind of you. Yeah, there's magic in that. And like the thing that I don't mention in too many places for obvious reasons is I don't really like football. I don't watch the Steelers on Sundays. The Chief is excellent just because he's such a character. And Tom was great playing him. Outside of Pittsburgh,
don't add us.
He's known. Right. Outside of Pittsburgh, he's had a career. He's mainly known as a character actor in horror movies. He's one of the leads in The Fog. He's the lead in Halloween 3, My Bloody Valentine. He's done a lot of John Carpenter. He's in Escape from New York. So he's a character actor beloved of horror fans who
especially those in the Pittsburgh area.
Clearly.
Right.
Yeah. If you see his face, you'd probably be like, oh, yeah, that guy.
I just Googled him, and I do recognize him.
Yeah.
Yeah. He also played
Escape from New York.
Yeah. He played Scrooge for a while at the CLO's school Christmas Carol. Huh. And Buddy's son is like my unofficial nephew. And that was always our tradition was going to see that. So I was the only one in that Halloween 3 crowd that night who showed up with a playbill from A Christmas Carol to ask him to sign. So
I love it.
Or crowd that night.
Everybody's out there hooting and hollering about Michael Myers Halloween, and then John just like, Scrooge!
Yeah, I'm probably going to do Halloween 3 this year. It's a long oversight. But to the movie going public, this didn't work. They immediately turned the series back to Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers. Jamie Lee Curtis was not on board to do more, so they basically kill her off screen between Halloween 2 and Halloween 4. So she's not in 4, 5, and 6. As John said, that turns towards Michael's niece. And they get a lot more Friday the 13th-esque. Mm. It's a lot more like, here's this, you know, intimidating killer in a new place that is just stalking more people.
How do they explain her death?
Yeah, do they actually say she died, or is it just she's not there?
I thought it was like a car crash.
It was, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So where does H2O fit into all this?
That's what we're getting to. Here's a word on the horribly confusing timeline of these movies. The few things you can set aside right away. Halloween 3 is related to nothing. Mm. The Rob Zombie movies are only related to themselves. Mm. Other than that, there are three separate timelines. This movie we're talking about, Halloween 2 from 1981, exists in two of those timelines. The original Halloween, Halloween 2, Laurie is killed off screen, then Halloween 4 through 6 happen. Uh-huh. That's one complete timeline.
Okay.
The second timeline, Halloween, Halloween 2, nothing happens until H2O.
Okay.
So H2O retcons 3 through 6. Mm. So that complete timeline is Halloween, Halloween 2, H2O, and Halloween Resurrection. Halloween Resurrection also killed Laurie.
Like on screen, or she was dead before? Like...
On screen. I
on screen, okay. Yeah. Okay. Same director, Rick Rosenthal. Really bad sequel.
That's the only time she's been killed on screen. The third timeline only counts Halloween and Halloween from 2018. So the most recent one retconned everything since the original film, including Halloween 2. This movie that we just watched is not in the timeline with the movie from 2018. In the movie from 2018, they are not siblings, and Michael is not magical.
Okay.
So
I'm into it.
All right. I just like to give a shout out to this director, Rick Rosenthal, which is just kind of ironic because on my other podcast, it's not ironic, it's coincidental. On my other podcast, Revisiting Sunnydale, we just watched an episode of Buffy that he directed. One of two episodes of Buffy that he directed, which is one of my favorite episodes, called Normal Again, where Buffy is really in a psychiatric hospital.
Oh, I can't handle that episode. That messes with me.
I wish the series should have ended there. Like, that would have been amazing, but okay. Ugh. Go on.
And H2O is pretty good. H2O was another case, like Halloween 2, that was like, this is the end. Because if you remember, H2O, spoilers, H2O ends with Laurie cutting off Michael Myers' head.
Right.
And then Resurrection had to be like, nope, he put the mask on a random paramedic. That was some other guy that got decapitated. Anyway.
Way to go, Laurie.
Yeah.
You're like the cops in this movie who blow up some trick-or-treater.
It takes them forever to find out that that's not. They don't seem really concerned about it either. Like, even when they find out that it wasn't Michael, they're just like, oh.
Also, like, I feel like there are plenty of people who are full-on adults who have no feelings.
Right, exactly. Right. Oh, no feelings. So he's got to be young.
Right, and also it's like a difference between 18. They're like, he must be 18 or 19 based on not having any cavities. And then it's like, well, Michael Myers is 21, so this isn't him.
So this is clearly it's not Michael.
It's almost like if Donald Pleasance was like, well, we're only 20 minutes into the movie, so it's not him.
Yeah, and that turned out to be Laurie Strode's would-be homecoming date referenced in the original movie, Ben Tramer. That was where that came from. So.
Oh.
I've seen these movies way too
Love
many
it.
Times, folks.
This is beautiful.
John, I have another question. The sheriff's daughter, did she get killed in the previous film?
She did. She was okay. Annie, Laurie Strode's best friend, the babysitter on who was across
yes.
the street.
Yeah, one of the kids okay. who was having sex, like they were, like, you know, having sex, and they so you get killed mm-hmm. in a horror film.
Yes. Wait. I was yeah. confused because I thought that the woman who's on the phone at the beginning, who is like, my neighbors are screaming or whatever, I thought that it was her and then her hair curled upon death.
That apparently was one of the scenes that Carpenter went back and directed because the movie didn't have enough of a punch to it. So when they screened it one time, they wanted to add some additional violence and scare. So that scene
scenes because the only final other one, product has a punch.
Yeah, the only other one I know of was the scene where the kid is walking with the boombox and they're giving the news report about where Laurie Strode was taken to. Michael bumps into him and then conveniently sees that sign that says Haddonfield Hospital, right. you know, this way. So, and I think some of the other violent scenes he went back to punch it up because, of course, Friday the 13th 1 and 2 had already come out at that point and kind of raised the bar on horror movie violence. So that was why they went ahead and added some additional stuff to this movie.
I thought it was kind of an odd choice in casting where, like, maybe it was just me, but the sheriff, the guy who's kid was killed, I kept thinking that he would, like, every other cop that wasn't the very bleach blonde guy looked like him, but I'm like, why is he here now? Like, shouldn't he be home grieving? And it's like, oh, that's not him. And then he shows up, it's like, oh, that's still not him. So I was, like, confused by, like, five other police officers that were not him.
I find blonde cop fascinating because that actor, and I use air quotes, he almost feels more real. Like, he feels like a really real person because he's so wooden and awkward, and he says all of his lines like he doesn't know what they mean. Like, he memorized them phonetically.
Do you not speak English, sir? Is English not your first language?
Yeah, he's actually Swedish. And...
Well, the only group less useful than police in this movie are hospital staff.
Oh my God.
One, this is a dramatically understaffed hospital.
Right?
I know Haddonfield's supposed to be a small town, but it gives the impression of being a large hospital with, like, maybe a half dozen people working
right.
on a busy night.
It's like, and it gives the impression that the hospital would close. Like, this is after hours.
Exactly.
Like,
what
oh.
Alex said. It was like that the hospital goes, okay, bedtime, goodbye, everyone.
And the only doctor you could find had been drinking at the country club.
Right.
So.
I liked that detail a lot.
Yeah.
But the only thing that really pulls this much below the original for me is in the original, we established who the characters were. Like, these are Laurie's friends. These are the relationship with them. This one really does that Friday the 13th thing of here's about 45 seconds of introducing a character so you maybe remember who they are when we kill them in 10 minutes.
Right.
Very interchangeable. And as good as that scene with the hot tub was, it was like, this feels like it's out of a much worse franchise.
Yeah, that seemed really out of place and unnecessary. And also, I feel like Jamie Lee Curtis probably only had, like, maybe 2 pages worth of dialogue in this entire film.
Was she, like, unavailable? I was curious if there is an extratextual reason for her to barely be in the movie.
Right.
Well,
John?
Well, I'm sorry, I missed this during Faxi. No, in fact, there's a very different version of this movie where she says much more, because there is a TV version of this movie where most of the violence is gone. Obviously, the hot tub scene is gone altogether. And in order to make up the time, they just filmed a bunch more dialogue scenes, including a bunch more dialogue scenes for Lori. Yeah. So they kind of sidelined her so they could kill more people off, I guess. Also, did I miss something? What cues her to wake up and run away? Like, she's kind of fine and flirting with hairdo there. And then, like, at a certain point, she's like, I need to get away. Like, did I her miss dreams? Something?
She had some dreams, maybe.
John.
I think it was, you know, I think that's what we end up with. But like Sean said, there were some additional scenes that ended up being filmed. And when Carpenter went in and added the additional violence, they basically just took out a bunch of scenes that kind of affected the continuity of the movie. So there's a few, like when the power goes out, apparently there's a scene where Michael cuts the power that is not in the theatrical version because of the other stuff that they took out. So a little bit of a continuity issue.
Also stuff like that, like Michael knowing to go where to go and how to like cut power, like that, you know, that sort of thing exists. He's been in an asylum since he was what, 6 years old? Like, mm-hmm. I just feel like there's certain things he might not Druids. Know about.
Mm-hmm. It's the Druids. I mean, the one to me was, how does he know how to operate a hot tub, let alone right. that a hot tub could be a threat? Right. Like,
yeah, the right. Druids didn't have hot tubs.
That's the only glaring flaw in the original, which clearly they had to write an explanation into the script later, is that he escapes the mental asylum by driving a car away from the asylum.
I thought that there was a point where he was supposed to have driven a car.
Mm-hmm. Right. And knew how to get back to Haddonfield.
Right. Yeah.
There's an awkward line of dialogue in the original where they're like, apparently someone must have taught him how to drive a car, and they leave it at that. Fine. The hot tub, no. He doesn't know how to kill somebody with a hot tub.
No.
He doesn't know what a hot tub is.
No. And I also feel like that he didn't know how to read past a 6 year old. He may know how to read a 6 year old, because they all talk about how he said nothing. He did nothing. And, you know, and right. then when we moved to Rob Zombie's version, he's just been making masks for like 30 years out of paper mache. So, I mean, you know, there's not a lot of learning going on with old Mikey.
Camila, you're a horror aficionado. Mm-hmm. Had you seen this one before?
I did, and I think I started down the path of watching all of them last year, or whenever they released the most recent one. I watched the first one, second one. Maybe I started to watch the third one, or I got, like, as I was watching the second one, I, like, turned to the interwebs and was like, hey, guys, blah, 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 like, basically trying to get some clarification on the timeline. And then I got all of that bullshit about, like, this one, that one, this one. And I was like, fuck it, I'm out. And so, yeah, I'd only seen the first one and the second one. And then I did see H2O because, you know, that was, like, the 90s, I think. And, you know, Josh Hartnett and all that business. Mm-hmm. And I think, was LL Cool J in that one?
He was. Yeah. He was the security guard. Yeah. Yep.
So I saw H2O, and then I eventually did see the most recent one. I don't think I saw Resurrection. Michael Myers was never really, like, this wasn't never really my franchise. I recall, like, when these movies came out when I was little, like, my cousins used to really, my younger cousins, boy cousins, they would tease us a lot and scare us a lot with the whole Michael Myers business. So I never really got into that later on in life. I think one of them ended up having a mask at some point in their lives. Yeah, it was a lot of torture, a lot of torment that went down.
Which is why you go at haunted house people with knives.
Right.
Area woman tormented by cousins.
Right.
So Robin, then, mm-hmm. having seen the major event Halloween films, but not any of the in-between ones, what did this do for you?
I really enjoyed it. I think that I was watching it with a favorable eye because John had selected it. And I was like, I know mm-hmm. that he didn't do this to punish us. And so there was that. My main problem with horror films is the violence. But I found the violence in this pretty cool. Like, that hot tub scene, it was interesting. You guys were like, this just feels out of place. I was like, this feels awesome. Like, I couldn't look away from it. And it's so horrifying. The fact that he kept pulling her head back up so she wouldn't drown.
Right.
He was like, I'm not drowning you. I'm melting your face off. Let's be clear. That is awesome. That's awesome. It's horrifying and awesome. Yeah. So like parts of it dragged and I could have done with more Laurie, but like I was scared in a not unpleasant way.
Huh.
That's all I could ever ask for from a horror movie, right?
Yeah. I mean,
I'm thrilled. I hope we keep that rolling throughout the month.
Me too. Right.
I thought it was just slow, that it dragged a bit and not in like,
it does drag
and
a
not
little.
Even in a mm-hmm. not in a suspenseful way, which is why I thought like back to back, this is a much better viewing. I'm absolutely certain.
Well, because I actually, as we discussed in last year's Halloween episode, I really like the original Halloween. I think that that's like, that is the horror movie that I'm like, yep, I'm on board. And also like we talked about with Alien, because they're both like, there's something there.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's very suspense. So I did find this quite different from the original Halloween, but it does have it every now and then.
The hot tub scene. It was refined in the only worthwhile moment of Jason X. Does anyone but me remember Jason X?
Oh, I remember. I don't think I ever saw it.
I did see it, but it's, you know, I'm more of a Halloween franchise fan than Friday the 13th, but I did see it at one point.
Jason X is the one in space.
Clearly.
And
wait.
Yes, Robin. There's a Jason that exists in space.
Outer space?
Let's just say, yes.
Outer
not,
space.
Not space, it's the art gallery downtown, but right. Outer space.
It goes a couple hundred years in the future, and then for some reason they bring him onto a spaceship, and, you know, it goes like you'd expect. And it's that exact same motion, only he's repeatedly dunking his victim's face into like something that will cryogenically freeze her. Oh. And so there's like three of them to just get her more and more frozen. And then he moves slightly and smashes her now frozen face.
That's dope.
Horrifying and dope. Yeah.
Dope.
People
slash
being frozen and shattered will always work for me because of my misspent youth rewatching Terminator 2 Judgment Day over and over and over again.
Misspent? Yeah. Come on now.
Yeah, you're right.
Can we talk about the PSA in the middle about with the kid that gets the razor blade stuck in his mouth from his candy?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that scene, that's the one scene that I really have to turn away from. I mean, maybe because I was of trick-or-treat age when this movie first came out, and that was the whole 80s hysteria about
right.
tainted candy and whatnot. Yeah.
Like, he had a whole ass razor blade in his mouth. Like, right?
Just the whole thing.
And he doesn't.
Which, to be clear, in the service of truth, this has never happened. Like, this was a media panic that was based on no actual incident. And the few times there's even a hint, it was someone like taking a picture of a candy next to a razor blade that they planted there because they were so scared of this thing that they were trying to convince people that it was real when it was not. This has never happened.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And that was a huge urban legend back in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah. And also like the fake tattoos that, you know, we used to get when we were little and people always be like, don't lick them or, you know, don't lick that thing. Like they were supposedly laced with LSD or something.
Yeah.
I know. I remember my mom having a big freak out about that for a while. Right.
And no one ever connected the dots to like, why would they just be giving away LSD to 7-year-olds?
Exactly.
What kind of business model is that?
It's like, do you know how much a tab of LSD costs? Like, you can't just, you're not just.
Real quick, the two big Wikipedia rabbit holes that I went down during the draggy parts of this movie. One was the history of breast implants, because I wanted to know if Hot Tub Lady's spectacular breasts were real. Probably not is the answer.
Okay.
And then the second was the history of Steadicam, because the opening Steadicam shots in this are so cool.
Yeah.
Like, they're so well done. And, like, I was kind of like, did Halloween start this? Is that why people started doing it? And the answer is no, but it was one of the first big ones. Okay. And then I read an interview with the inventor of that Steadicam device, and he was like, yeah, after I did Halloween, everyone wanted me.
Oh, wow.
He was like, my phone was ringing off the hook, people trying to get my Steadicam shots in movies.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a big holdover from the original film. And that is kind of my favorite part of the movie, when you have the Michael Myers point of vision shots in the, you know, first 15 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, I do appreciate those too. And also like when he bumps into the kid with the boombox, like how we kind of move through that the town square basically for a second, when we start talking to the really selfish nurse who's like, I can't drop you off. About, you know, that's 5 minutes to your place and another five. bitch. And then, but then like we how we just kind of moved through the square. I thought that that was a really cool shot.
Yeah, it's funny how that all that was filmed in the middle. I'm sorry, Sean. right in the middle of Hollywood too. I mean, it was supposed to be the Midwest, but I've actually visited the street where the two Wallace and Doyle houses are. They're right off of Sunset Boulevard. You would never think that you were right in the middle of a busy part of Hollywood.
So it wasn't a soundstage? It was right there?
No, it was all, yeah. In the original movie, I guess, Carpenter and Deborah Hill had, you know, painted leaves that they would strew around the area. And every now and then you can catch a palm tree in the distance that they're trying not to shoot. But yeah, it was all filmed in LA and South Pasadena.
Nice.
It looks so much like, you know, not here because it's flat, but it looks like so much like Midwestern, you know, Indiana, Illinois, Ohio. Like it's a small town America.
Yeah.
Yep.
I agree. Good location scouting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I love, John, that you went on that pop culture pilgrimage because I love pop culture pilgrimages.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They had a tour from the Chinese theater out there. And I have a cousin who lives out there. And I said, I'm going to take this tour. She says, why in the world would you do that? I'll just drive you. So we went around there.
That's awesome.
The Nightmare on Elm Street house is a few streets over. And so that's definitely a fun thing to do when visiting LA.
I did something like that with in Austin with Death Proof. We kind of went around and like poked around and found some of the spots that they were that was filmed in and stuff. And I wanted to do one when we went to Miami for Dexter, but the only thing that we could find was like hit the outside of his apartment building. So that was pretty cool. Mm.
I went to the town where they shot Groundhog Day, which is not Punxsutawney. I think it's in Indiana. It was one of my cross country road trips, and ate a lunch in that little diner.
Oh, cute.
Yeah. And I've also been to the Double R Diner, or whatever it's called in real life, from Twin Peaks.
In Washington, it's not quite in Seattle, but I'm very, very jealous. I was maybe going to Seattle in January. Now, who knows?
The thing that is awesome about it is that when we were there, there were two cars at the parking lot that had Twin Peaks stuff on them. So it was like, we're not the only dorks here.
Mm-hmm. They'll be in a business forever on that.
Right. The pie was just okay.
If you do ever make it to Seattle, Sean, you should definitely go to the Pop Culture Museum because that's that's everything. Everything.
I went to the Sci-Fi Museum, which is like the base of the Space Needle next to the Experience Music Project, and loved it. They had a ton of movie props.
It's just all this fucking fun stuff. And when I went, it was either right before or right after Halloween a couple years ago, and they had a whole entire exhibit on the on horror movies, on the history of horror, and it was beautiful. And it was just like by accident that we happened to even come across that exhibit. I'm like,
it's here for me.
Right.
John, what I was meaning to ask you, so you've had the full sweep of this movie, having that experience in Times Square, which likely, you know, turned it into one of the best things you'd ever seen.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, looking back on it, just watching at home, how does it hold up for you?
That actually was Halloween 4 that I had the Times Square experience. I think Halloween 2 does hold up. I mean, I was a kid when I had to wait until it came on HBO because I wasn't allowed to see R-rated movies in the theater back then. But I think it does hold up. It's a big drop off in quality from the original movie just because it is so repetitive. And of course, Carpenter was able to achieve so much with so little violence in the original and the plot holes and whatnot. So I do watch it as part of my annual Halloween viewing, so it does hold up to a certain extent. I mean, I think there's a little bit of, you know, nostalgia from childhood that, you know, carries that along, but not a bad sequel. And I think it, you know, it is fun to watch it, you know, back to back with the original.
Well, that's a good transition into rating it. John, we'll save you for last as the guest so that your enthusiasm does not sway us.
Right.
I gave it a 71. I think it's a very solidly good movie with that undoubtedly loses some of the magic of the original, but is such a solid sequel that I have to give it a good score. That includes a 2-point bonus for including my favorite line from Night of the Living Dead when Barbara goes, "Stop it, you're ignorant." Removing 1 point again for a wacky blood pratfall, which seemed inappropriate at that late stage in the film.
Yeah, Colin was like, it would coagulate.
thank you, Colin. Camila, your score?
49.
Just slightly south of good, then.
Yeah, I mean, it was just so slow for me. And again, like I keep reiterating, but yes, like had I watched it right after the first one, I feel like it would have been a higher score. And there was just like so much silence, so many silent, like dialogueless moments that I was just really, why?
I don't know. I think Robin went higher than Camila on a horror movie.
Yeah.
Am I true?
Did you are?
Am
true.
I true?
Am I?
It's the true, true. 65. I enjoyed it.
And finally, John, who gave us this film.
I'm gonna go with a 70. Being realistic, I mean, it has its flaws, of course. Like I said, I do enjoy watching it on Halloween night. In terms of the other sequels, I think it's, you know, close to one of the better ones. So, yep, go with a solid 70.
I like it.
That gives us an entirely respectable 63 and change, 63.75. That's down there around like how much we liked a little bit more than Sharky's Machine. This is a little bit better than Sharky's Machine.
Wow.
That seems fine to me.
Yeah.
To the bingo card, I guess this counts as an original that has been remade since Rob Zombie has a Halloween 2.
Oh, yeah.
But yep. Is it the same plot?
No, but it is a remake. I mean,
you're right.
It's the same property. I'm going to say yes.
Okay, second question. Michael Myers,
orphan.
Did he kill his parents?
Yes. I'm pretty sure he's an orphan. I don't recall if he killed his parents.
I don't think he killed his parents.
He didn't, but they do. The nurse does make that reference that Laurie was adopted by the Strodes after her parents died. So
right.
I think you can go with orphan.
Yeah,
I think you are correct.
Yeah. Had I picked Halloween 4, we could have said released in 1988. But oh well.
I am now one away from bingo in three different places. So released in 88, Fistfight or Friendly Robot.
Oh, wow. I just need an American on-screen American president and an adapted from TV show. John, are you close with anything?
I am not.
We continue to go into the Halloween season with only me with a veto, and it just feels so powerful. We've been going a while, so we're going to do a lightning round of You Can't Handle the Truth. Everybody gets one thing they want to rant about. Let's start with Robin.
I watched Enola Holmes, and I found it quite pleasant.
Yep, okay. That's about right. I mean, I didn't give it a great score. It's pleasant to watch. They needn't have tried to appeal to all ages and like make sure it was a PG-13 and all of that. Like, this could just be a kid's adventure.
It is a kid's movie, and they should have leaned into it.
Oh, is
a kid's movie.
Oh.
But here's the thing. It definitely awakened my inner 10-year-old girl. Like,
yes.
It's fine.
Lucky girl solves mysteries. I'm on board.
Yeah. No movies. I started watching the A Wilderness of Error. On Hulu about the docuseries about this guy who lived on an army base. Is like a murder that happened in 69 or 70, and his whole family was murdered. He got away with some superficial stab wounds. Everyone was like, okay, somebody came in here. Some crazy hippies came in and did this. Okay. So I'm only like in episode one, but it looks really, it's really interesting, and I like what's happening with it. I had never heard of this case before. I guess what they're saying is that there was a movie, a fictional movie that was made about it. And also, I think there were a couple books written. But because it happened right around the same time as the Manson, Sharon Tate murders and all that stuff, like it kind of got pushed away. Pushed in the background of things.
I am very interested in the story behind the movie Ava. Is anyone even aware of this thing? It's just barely out now. It's playing at some drive-ins, and it's on demand, not at the $19.99 price. It's on demand for like $8.
Okay.
And I went last night because I'm like, what the hell happened here? This is an incredibly stacked cast. Mm-hmm. It's like an Assassin in Trouble movie. The Assassin in Trouble is Jessica Chastain, also starring John Malkovich, Gina Davis, Colin Farrell,
what?
Common, and Joan Chen.
Joan Chen!
Right. Like, it's a top-to-bottom stacked cast. It's not great, but it's not dreadful. So, like, I'm like, what? How is this?
None of us heard of it?
Yeah.
I think the answer is the writer-director is this Australian dude. I forget his name, and it's not worth saying his name. Who is kind of on and off in disgrace because he can't stop beating people up, some of which are in domestic violence situations. Like, he's just has 12 different incidences of being in jail or being arrested for some violent act. And Jessica Chastain, who's the producer on this movie, got dragged for being obviously a vocal Me Too supporter who was also working with this dude. He left the project as a director when all of that flap was happening, but it's still his script. And so it sort of seems like they ended up like half burying this movie rather than deal with it.
Wow.
Which is weird.
His name is Tate Taylor, and he directed The Help.
Not Tate Taylor. Tate Taylor is the guy that came in to direct after the question stepped away, at least from directing. The credit
is the worst thing that Tate Taylor has ever done is direct The Help.
Is direct The Help. Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, the guy's name is it's the writer, Matthew Newton.
Sounds like a prick. Newton.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, like, your mileage may vary in a major way because of who this guy is. If you're curious, all of those talented people that I just mentioned are great in this movie. It's not an excellent movie. It, you know, needed a better director and probably a couple more passes on the script. It's kind of the hunter has become the hunted, an assassin in trouble. It's every one of those you've ever seen. But that cast is unbelievable.
Right. Yeah. I'm kind of like, where the hell has Gina Davis been? Like, this is probably the first time I've heard
shooting arrows.
I hope
solving complicated logic problems.
Yeah, sure. Gina Davis is world title holding archer, or she's been in the Olympics finals multiple times. I don't think she's ever made the U.S. team.
The what?
Yeah, she shoots arrows.
I mean, I feel like that's a much better title than actress. Like, you should probably, like, that should be the number one.
Yeah, it's like Gina Davis, world-class archer and Academy Award winner.
Right, yeah, exactly. Like, duh. You're burying the lead, Gina. Jeez.
With counting common, how many Oscar winners are in that movie? That's...
I don't know. Did Colin Farrell win an Oscar ever?
He's never even been nominated.
I mean, it's not
which really. I think is wild. I'm not 100% sure what I think he should have been nominated for, but it seems like it should have happened by now.
For Fright Night.
It just feels like it.
For Fright Night. Absolutely.
John, anything you like that you've seen recently, feel free to.
I just saw The King of Staten Island with Pete Davidson. Thought it was a good, solid comedy with, you know, Bill Burr and Marissa Tomei. So just rented that. So probably one of the last non-horror movies I'll watch, you know, once we get into October and do the deep dive and, you know, pulling out all the movies that I usually watch during that month. All
right. The next 31 days are spoke for. Like, it's
yep.
They're all. I pull them out.
Give us an underrepresented pick. What's one of your hidden gem horror movies that you go to in during spooky season?
My go-to is definitely Mike Dougherty's Trick or Treat. I've always been a fan of anthology movies. You know, big fan of Creepshow, and this was one that unfortunately didn't get the theatrical release that it deserves, but. Has a solid cast, Brian Cox and Anna Paquin, all set in a small town in Ohio. There are like four stories that all interconnect all on Halloween night. And it does kind of go into the different legends of Halloween. No druids that I can remember, but, you know, all about, you know, don't blow out the jack-o'-lantern. And there's this little character, mm-hmm. Sam, who kind of ties all the stories together. So next to the Halloween franchise, that is definitely my go-to. Also a big Ray Bradbury fan, so I always pull out Something Wicked This Way Comes and the animated Halloween Tree.
Yeah, I think I saw mm-hmm. Trick or Treat for the first time like maybe 2 years ago and was immediately just like, why am I just now seeing this movie? Mm-hmm. Like, this thing is amazing.
Excellent recommendations. Giving our listeners something else to look for as we get into the season. Not that many of us need trouble. Horror movies, very available. All right, shall we draw a film?
Yes.
Yes, please.
We are operating from the abbreviated list, the Halloween season list, which we will continue to use throughout October. 139 of the films on our big list have been declared October appropriate, and we have drawn number 136.
Damn.
Now remember, that's tricky because this list is chronological, and that lands us on The Nun. You know, The Nun. She's a spooky nun.
She's the lady behind the dumpster in Mulholland Drive.
Yeah.
Is this the one that was part of the Conjuring series?
Yeah. I'm struggling because I want to get something more interesting than that. I only have one veto to play.
Yeah, this is true.
Yeah, I went to Catholic school and I was terrified by nuns, and this movie just did not do it for me. But I don't have a vote in this.
I think you do. I feel like you could push Sean towards what I think his heart says.
I'm curious because I haven't seen it.
Okay.
But most of these are bad. I don't know. I'm not playing the veto. Here's
okay.
Why.
Okay.
We're doing three more of these. They can't all be zingers. I am curious about The Nun because I've seen a bunch of The Conjuring universe and not this one. If we don't get something I'm excited about next week, I'm absolutely doing it. But we had Halloween 2, thanks to John. I can put up with The Nun. So we're doing it. We're doing The Nun, everybody. Time to get a spooky-faced lady jumping out of corners.
John, thank you again for joining us today and for picking a pretty cool movie and for knowing everything about it.
Because
as you may know from listening to the podcast, I love facts, and you brought so many wonderful facts. And once again, thank you so much for your donation to Arcade Comedy Theater. It's Pittsburgh's nonprofit comedy theater, and y'all can check out bit.ly/arcadeathome. Go there, and why not make a donation in John's honor?
Well, thanks so much for having me, guys. I really enjoyed it. Hope the episode went well, and glad the movie wasn't too bad to sit through. So, and enjoy the rest of October, and hope you guys pick some good horror movies to review this month.
Thank you.
So, just real quick, production note: Sean's computer ran out of batteries. He can't use his microphone. So, sorry. The quiz at the end is going to be tinny.
Yep.
Okay.
Back in. I have 2 minutes. Halloween 2 was released October 30th, 1981. What was the number one song in America? Immediate hint, because I'm running out of battery, it's from a very different movie.
Oh.
Was it Arthur's theme?
John gets it.
Wow.
Arthur's theme, parentheses, Best You Can Do.
Look at you.
By Christopher Cross.
Oscar-winning song.
I don't know if I like Christopher Cross, but I bought a Christopher Cross album because the song Sailing makes me want to buy a boat.
I do love Sailing, the song.
Yeah. It's just a beautiful song. And let's just picture Michael Myers sailing off into the breeze.